Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSH Society Radio Show. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for having me aboard here in your life as we talk a little bit about FSH Society and everything else that pertains to FSHD and all the hard work going into research and donation and all those great things. And, of course, your stories, which is always what fuels the show here. We want to hear from you. And you can start by doing that by reaching out today. You can contact me via the show studio line, which is a great way to talk to me a little bit. That studio number is 949-270-5953. And all you really have to do is go ahead and hit the number one to talk to the host when you're ready. And we'll talk to you live here on air with your questions, comments, and whatnot. You can also follow the show on Twitter at FSH Society, Facebook as well. Contact the show via email, fsh@fshsociety.org, for your comments, and we can get those in on the next show. And, of course, the website, fshsociety.org. So it's been about 2 months since I talked to you all last, and sorry about that. I had a little scheduling conflict last time, and we got it all worked out this show. We're really excited to have a great guest in today, Therese Hamida, PhD. She's done some great research. She's a research assistant professor at the Department of Pharmacology Center for Molecular Medicine at the University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. That's a mouthful. That's a great title. We might shorten that before she gets on, but the point is that she's a great guest, bringing in the kind of science side of this very I guess for me it's complicated, even though I have FSHD, but the whole, you know, DNA side of things, we're going to kind of get into that, talk a little bit about CRISPR and what is that about, you know, kind of DNA altering. And you know, I think a lot of people have heard that even in other sources of media with CRISPR of altering DNA and even a negative, you know, side to it, like almost creating your perfect child, so to speak, is what some people want to use it for. So we're not going to drift too much that direction in the subject matter of it, but in all honesty, we definitely want to talk about how is it going to help in the fight against FSHD, kind of turning off that DNA. So she'll hopefully explain it in a better way than I just have. also, people sometimes want to follow me personally. You can. I'm Tim Hollenbach. You can find me on Facebook. At Rec Room Show is my Twitter handle. RecRoomShow@gmail.com is my email address if you want to send me any correspondence just directly is totally fine. Fine by me. I'm all about communicating and helping you out, answering questions, this and that, you know, sharing stories. I guess that's what's kind of fueled me to do this show, as I've said it each episode, is that I love talking. Of course, I'm always fine with that. But, of course, I love talking to you great people and talking about this. This is one of the main things that we have in common here. If you're an FSHD patient or a caregiver, a family member, a friend, there's always a lot to talk about, and I know 2 months ago we had an interesting question on, and that question was, you know, that I laid out there is what's more of a, I guess, a hindrance, or what weighs on you more? Is it the physical aspect or is it the mental, right? And we talked about that a couple episodes back, and I think a lot of people thought one went hand in hand with the other. You have a physical problem, it turned into a mental because you couldn't do something you could before and this and that. And there's no question for me, since I've had the diagnosis not even a year yet, it'll be a year in November, for me it is definitely more the mental side. I feel like I'm still, you know, blindly going into the night when it comes to physically doing things I used to do. I still coach, you know, flag football for my boys, still coach a lot of baseball and organizing teams and trying to stay as athletic as possible. There's no question, though, when I hit those limitation walls even though they're still subtle yet for me, but I know they're there. It weighs on me mentally. So we can always talk about, you know, past, I guess my point is, we can always talk about past comments and other things that, you know, we want to talk about or address, you know, and we can always do that. I also wanted to promote a couple things before we have our featured guest on. And one of the big things is the ad campaign going on right now, or the raising money campaign, the Forget Me Not campaign. Tomorrow is the last day for that. And if you go to fshsociety.org, you can quickly donate to help us meet that goal of $50,000. Right now it's currently at $19,275. So we have a ways to go, and we can help make that final push here by using this show as a vessel. That's right, I said it, a vessel, to raise some money through this Forget Me Not campaign. Michelle and David Mackey's annual Lake Party fundraiser for FSHD has gone viral this year. She has a video out there on fshsociety.org. So at your leisure, you know, between August 1st and the 31st, which is right around the corner here, it's tomorrow, come up and go to the website and go ahead and donate and contribute, because we have a match. We have a match happening. For every dollar raised, there will be a match. So once again, the goal is $50,000. We're at $19,275. Let's hit that goal. Let's pass it up. I think we can do that. That'd be great. Then I can really say, wow, man, my voice is really getting people to get going out there to raise that kind of money in short order. So go on there right now while I'm talking to you, while you're listening to the show, and go ahead and donate. Do it after the show. Hit that deadline with a fury, and let's totally meet that goal. Also, volunteers are always needed. Please make sure you go to fshsociety.org, become a volunteer, organize a group in your area. You can always do that. People want, you know, more help out there locally, either for outreach or to talk about the disease with, like I said, people that have it, or caregivers or family members. I'm thinking myself also to start a support group here in my Milwaukee area. So reach out, fshsociety.org. They can help you out and become a advocate, volunteer, get involved. That's always, you know, one of the key things to do. And while you're donating, think about donating some tissue, helping the fight that way. If it's either by, you know, when you pass and you want to donate that way, or, you know, someone has already donated via, you know, with surgeries. And we'd love to have you do that. Like if you share into Maureen I's story, that you can find on FSH Watch or fshsociety.org, has her story on there. It's a Wanted Dead or Alive campaign, you know, for tissue samples to help fight against FSHD and help find a cure. So that's always huge things. We've got a lot of things going on in that regard. Normally we take a little break here, but I think we have our featured guest waiting on the line. I don't want to have her wait, you know, too long, because I love having these great guests take the time to come on the show and give us their story. So I think without further ado, we should bring her on. So let me introduce to you the featured guest of this show is Charisse Hamida, and she's a PhD, and she'll tell you a little more about herself after I ask her this question first. Did I pronounce your name right?
No, but that's okay. Nobody ever does.
Dang it.
No, it's Charisse.
Charisse, that's more simple than how I just said. A beautiful name.
Oh, thanks.
So, first off, thanks for coming on the show, taking the time. I know we had to reschedule
from
last month's show, and really glad that you took the time out to join us and talk a little bit about the science side, which all honesty is way over my head for the most part.
Oh, no,
I think
I'm happy to do it.
So I think you're the right person for the job to kind of explain it down a little bit for all of us. And of course, you know, pinpoint into your research. But first, tell us a little bit about maybe, I guess, that, like your research, the work's going in, and what drew you towards FSHD and joining the fight.
Oh, sure. So I'm a muscle biologist by training. I've worked for many years on the mechanisms that regulate genes in muscle cells. So what combinations of signals does it take to turn these genes on or off? And how do these signals get disrupted in disease? And I got involved in FSHD when I started working with Peter and Takako Jones, who focus exclusively on the disease. That was back in 2012.
So at that point, that's kind of what just kept you sparked with this interest because of your, you know, muscle background or trying, you know, because it's, I mean, that's what this disease is. It attacks
that.
It
was a really good match.
That was just perfect niche, huh? Yeah.
It was a good match. And you know, their research is just, you know, fascinating and really impactful in terms of, you know, understanding the mechanism and trying to find treatments. So, yeah, it's been working really well for the last 6 years, I guess.
6 years. Where does the DNA, you know, fall into your research? You know, I mean, how does DNA impact us, those that have FSHD? What is the link there?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Most diseases are caused by a mutation in an important gene that prevents that gene from producing a functional protein. But FSHD is really different. The disease locus for FSHD is this large DNA sequence that's repeated many times, and all of these repeats are normally repressed and silent. Which is a good thing because this region contains a gene called DUX4, which can be very toxic if it's turned on in certain tissues. And what happens in FSHD is that there's a loss of silencing, normal silencing at these repeats, which allows DUX4 to be expressed, and that causes pathology in skeletal muscle.
So are we saying then that we have to do some type of, you know, DNA editing or gene editing in order to kind of fix that issue?
Well, that's one way to do it. There are really a lot of different avenues, and other researchers are working on other things. There are people working on trying to turn DUX4 down, as we've done, and there are people targeting the downstream pathways. So DUX4 is a factor that can activate a lot of other genes, which you know, really shouldn't be expressed in skeletal muscle, and it's those mediators that cause damage. And people are looking upstream, and you know, our lab and others are also looking upstream at the mechanisms that drive DUX4 expression, looking for therapeutic targets there too. So, the good news is the field is in a much better position now than it was in, you know, 10, 15 years ago. You know, we finally know the molecular cause of FSHD, and because of that, we really have a lot of targets and avenues for therapy, which we didn't have back then. So it's a good time to be in the field.
And I know with all that research with DNA and DNA altering or editing, as some have said, and now that's kind of one of those coined phrases out there that you hear in the media, and that has nothing really to do with necessarily the fight with FSHD. But then, of course, then it's the term of, you know, CRISPR. So what is CRISPR?
Yeah, so, well, gene editing technology, CRISPR is one type of gene editing technology, and gene editing is basically a way of modifying an organism's DNA. You know, people are using it to correct disease-causing mutations or to introduce some other change into the genome. And CRISPR is a particular gene editing tool, which is much easier and faster and more powerful than the ones that came before it. And it basically consists of a protein called Cas9, which is paired with a strand of RNA. And the Cas9 protein cuts DNA, kind of like a molecular surgeon. And you can think of the RNA as sort of taking the hand of this surgeon and guiding it to any location in the genome that matches the sequence of that RNA. So you can design an RNA to find a specific disease gene for, you know, sickle cell anemia or any muscular dystrophy, and it will lead the Cas9 protein straight to that faulty gene. And Cas9 then cuts, and out comes the defective DNA. And if you provide a correct version of the DNA, then the cell's own surgical repair team will insert it in the place of the old DNA. So that's sort of a simple version of how it works.
So it's basically cell surgery, is what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of is. It's been likened to a scalpel, you know, before we had a butter knife. I think I read that in an article once, because it is very precise, you know, but there are caveats, and there are serious concerns. You know, people worry about off-target effects. You know, how do we know that, that Cas9 is going to go where we tell it to go? Because, you know, DNA sequences are, you know, very similar, you know, in different places. And, you know, Cas9 could be recruited to, you know, very dangerous areas of the genome. And this is one way I think our research is a little bit different from the things that people are typically using CRISPR to do.
So I guess you got to explain this to me like I'm an elementary school person, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, so you have this device then, is it Cas9?
It's a protein.
It's this protein that sends in to do this, you know, cell surgery, right? So if I have, I have FSHD. So is there ever going to be a day that I can make an appointment with someone that does this and I can get my DNA fixed?
That's possible. I mean, that's what people are trying to use.
Is that the goal?
One of the things
yeah.
people are trying to, that is the goal with this technology. But, you know, of course, CRISPR can be used to do a lot of other things. And right now, you know, safety issues are really paramount. But yeah, I think our study at least showed that in principle, you know, it's feasible for FSHD. Safer in a safer way than with the cutting version of Cas9 that the vast majority of people are using to try to address these diseases.
So you're saying there's the cutting that has what then the more risk factor involved because of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing about FSHD. That's interesting. So other diseases require the cutting function of Cas9. So researchers can remove the mutated part of a disease gene and replace it with a correct sequence. But with FSHD, we don't need to correct a mutation. We really just need to turn down the expression of a toxic gene. So we used a non-cutting version of Cas9 fused to another protein whose job is to keep genes off. And this particular version of the tool is called CRISPR inhibition because instead of cutting genes, it turns them off. And it's perfectly suited for FSHD. Yeah, you know, to cut would be extremely risky for this disease because the DUX4 gene is present in every single copy of this large repeat sequence, which means it's present in hundreds of copies throughout the human genome. And using Cas9 to cut it hundreds of places in your DNA is probably not a good idea. But using a dead version of this protein fused to a repressor protein should be much safer because we're not introducing any permanent changes into the DNA. You know, it's recruited to hundreds of locations that are normally supposed to be off anyway. And I think it's important to point out that we don't need to silence DUX4 completely. We just need to turn it down. There are a number of FSHD patients who are asymptomatic and still have low levels of DUX4 expression. And if we can just get down to those levels, it would be therapeutic.
So let's say, going back to me, going into someone that specializes in this at some road down the line in our future, that they can help in this regard with this Cas9, you know, non-cutting device or protein, I should say. And the risks, it seems, aren't too low. So then if this corrects the DNA in a patient, then will they be growing muscle back or strengthening muscle again?
Well, hopefully the muscle cells where, you know, DUX4 is turned off will survive and function like normal muscle cells. You know, we're hoping that by lowering DUX4 to sort of therapeutic levels, whatever those might be, you know, we'll be blocking all those downstream pathways which lead to, you know, inflammation and all the symptoms of dystrophy. So that's the hope. And, you know, this can also be delivered in a controllable way. So if it becomes a problem, if it's dangerous, you know, we can turn it off. There won't be permanent cuts in the DNA. So that's the hope. That's kind of what we're aiming for.
And on a large scale, if you were somewhere along this timeline of where you've begun this research to where you hope the goal meets, where do you think you are in there? Are you halfway? Are you 40%?
Well, you know, other researchers did the really hard part. We're coming up with the targets. You know, the targets, just understanding the molecular nature of the disease. That was a huge thing. And you know, Solveig van der Merrell and Richard Lemmers and Steve Tapscott and their collaborators, you know, did some seminal research to give us those targets. You know, then the CRISPR pioneers really, you know, this is a bacterial system. It's actually a form of primitive immune system in bacteria. And in 2012, there were some very bright people who decided this would make a great, you know, tool for a lot of different applications. And so, you know, in a way, that's really the hard work. And, you know, there's still a lot to be done in terms of getting good delivery to skeletal muscle, good efficiency, good specificity. You know, there's still a lot of questions to be answered. It's impossible to predict exactly when, you know, might make it to the clinic. But, yeah, it's encouraging. I think we're making good progress. The whole field is making great progress.
So why it seems like that this type of technology is ideal for battling like FSHD or other muscular dystrophy type things, I'd imagine. Is it a superior technology than compared to helping other diseases?
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, it's really applicable to a lot of diseases, but most of them will require the cutting version. You know, there is a mutation, you know, that has to be fixed, and that's going to be dangerous. You know, FSHD is the only disease I can think of where this CRISPR inhibition actually is sort of perfectly suited for it. But the good news is, you know, there are a lot of people, very bright people, working very hard trying to develop these platforms and make them safer, make them more efficacious. And I think the FSHD field can only stand to benefit, you know, from all of this interest, not just in the U.S., but internationally, you know, in developing these platforms. You know, I always think that progress for any disease is really progress for all diseases, because so many of these tools, you know, turn out to be broadly useful.
Yeah, I suppose you're right that you're making headway in research that can probably be copied or at least used, you know, in other researches to help if
in
it's
other...
MS or whatnot. Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah,
right,
there's
exactly.
a greater good factor.
But
you know, the word that you keep, you know, you've said it a couple of times, you know, is risk, you know, it has less risk or there's risk. So what is the risk involved in this, you know, Cas9 not cutting protein style compared to the other, you know, can you go like risk to risk conversation?
Yeah. So cutting the genome is risky because if it goes to the wrong place, you could, for example, cut in a tumor suppressor gene that's important for preventing cancer, you know, and then that's a serious concern. Having too many cuts in the genome makes the cell unstable, you know, and causes all kinds of problems with genomic instability. And it's just not a good thing at all. So trying to figure out how specific Cas9 is, and there's a lot of work being done to try to not only figure out how specific it is, but to engineer it to be more specific, and a lot of work being done on that. With the non-cutting version that we used, we don't have to worry about cutting, so that's never an issue. It's still possible that our protein fused to, you know, the repressor could go to an off target where we don't want to turn things off, you know, and turn some other gene down, which is important. So, you know, that would be the risk of our strategy. But you know, there's risks with every technology, and the important thing is to really try to understand the tool and you know, make it as safe as possible, which is what all this preclinical, all the studies that people are doing now are geared towards.
What can a person listening do to help in that regard, in helping studies? Is it, are you looking for guinea pigs? Are you looking for more just on the finance side? Yeah.
Well, you know, the FSH Society website is a great resource for information about the disease. You can find out more about what our lab is doing. You know, CRISPR is just one of the things that we're doing. We actually have a lot of things going in the lab. On our webpage at UNR, it's the Peter and Takako Jones Lab. And for patients, I would just say make sure you're registered. There's a national registry at Rochester, and all the information for that is on the FSH Society website. Because clinical trials, you know, will come down at some point down the road, and you know, we all need to be prepared for them. I should say also there are now companies dedicated to the fight against FSHD. So there's Fulcrum Therapeutics in the U.S. There's also Fascio Therapies in Europe. And there are larger pharma companies that have FSHD programs now. And this is a huge turnaround from the past. So, you know, it goes hand in hand with having these great targets, these great avenues for therapy now. We're really getting a lot of interest from companies, which is really good.
And when other companies, if it's, I mean, this is not a magic pill, is it? I mean, this isn't something that someone's going to go get a pill eventually, or is it?
Well, hopefully.
It's more getting a therapy.
Hopefully
it's a pill.
But
CRISPR.
You know, right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so many people working on different types of cure for FSHD, and ideally, you know, a pill would be the best. You know, everybody, you know, just wants something that's easy to take and not too invasive, painful, you know, and the fewer times the better. So, yeah, you know, we'll see, you know, there's a whole lot of different possibilities in terms of treatment, and it'll be interesting to see what, you know, what comes first, what wins out, what the gold standard will end up being.
There's, you know, back to the science a little bit of it all. And I know that term, you know, turning off the DNA sequence, if I'm even saying this right, I have no idea. But when you use the term,
sure,
you know, turning it off, so that means it's always on in the people that have FSHD.
in people that have FSHD, there's a pathogenic copy of this repeat, which is just one out of hundreds. And that's the one that DUX4 is expressed from, and that's the one that needs to be turned off. All the others are pretty much off already. So that's just really one copy. Yeah, it's about turning that off or preventing expression from that one copy.
So what makes this then, you know, kind of now tying the last two things we're talking about, you know, what makes this different than the work done that other, you know, researchers are doing, if it's, you know, finding that magical, you know, pill, or if it's this, you know, what is the difference between one research and the other? Or is that too broad of a question?
Well, you know, other labs are really using different methods to silence expression of DUX4 or the downstream pathways. You know, some people are using antisense approaches. Some people are looking at drugs to turn DUX4 down or stop, you know, the downstream pathology. Our approach was a little different. We really tried to overcome the underlying defect by returning the DNA at the disease locus, you know, to its normal repressed state. Every therapeutic strategy, you know, has its own strengths and weaknesses. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, what plays out in the coming years.
And so when you were a young child, and you thought when I was a young child, I thought I want to be a baseball player, or I want to, you know, whatever. I didn't think I was be doing this, of course, but did you dream of doing this or making a difference of some type? I mean, when did that path become very clear to you that research or this kind of line of work is what you wanted to do?
Well, I always liked science, and I think in college, you know, that's when you're an undergrad, you know, that's when most people get involved in working in a lab. And, you know, you start off washing dishes, and you got to kind of prove that you're interested in doing research. But that's when you start to see, you know, great biomedical research being done, and you get excited about it. And you realize also, you know, what science really is. You know, it's not sort of the epiphanies. They don't happen that often, and it's a lot of sort of an iterative process of, you know, getting closer to the truth or getting closer to some treatment. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. You know, it's always inspiring to, you know, see problems overcome, you know, in the history of science and have people to look up to, you know, current day people. And you see all that. And I think that's what really motivated me in college to, you know, go down this path. Yeah, it's definitely been worth it.
So was there a particular person, like, you know, for me, I would say as a younger person growing up, you know, I admired, let's say, you know, Wayne Gretzky or somebody like that. But as you went into college and you started to know more about science and more about following your path, was there, let's say, air quotes, a hero, that someone that you admired a lot and that you were trying to almost, you know, follow, so to speak?
You know, actually, the people who really I really enjoyed were the science writers, really good science writers, because one thing scientists tend to not be very good at is communicating information to the public and communicating with the public. You know, I think a lot of people have the impression that research is just looking things up in books instead of actually, you know, trying to understand how the world works. And people get frustrated too, because, you know, I mean, we've been supporting cancer research for so long, and, you know, there's still cancer in the world, and sometimes people get frustrated and say, what's the point? Why are we doing this? Why are we spending so much money on research and it's so slow, and, you know, but it's one thing I've learned about biology is it's tremendously complicated. It's really difficult, and, you know, people are very different too. You know, when you perturb the environment of a cell, there's a cost and a consequence to that, right? And people who take any drug, you know, and we all take drugs for something, you know, we're all patients at some point in our lives. And, you know, there's always side effects, and they're different in different people. And the long-term consequences of something like gene editing are just as unpredictable, and in many ways they're more dangerous. You know, you can always stop taking a drug, but the CRISPR system, as it's typically used with the cutting, you know, results in permanent changes. So, but anyway, getting back to, you know, the people I admired were the science writers who could really get this across, all the complexities of biology and the things scientists do. I thought Natalie Angier, who wrote... what did she write? She wrote several books. And one was about the search for the first oncogenes. And it was absolutely fascinating because you really, she took you into the life of a lab, you know,
yeah.
Bob Weinberg and Mike Wigler and the early scientists and what it was like, you know, they're starting not knowing what is going on. And it's like detective work and they figure it out. And it was very inspiring to me. I really enjoyed that.
So then you must like mystery novels as well then.
Yeah, the good ones. I like the old Chandlers. Yeah. I like science fiction, too.
Oh, imagine that.
I mean, that
makes sense.
That's really inspiring, right? Anything's
yeah,
possible.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
So what is a typical work day for you in the lab?
Oh, a lot of swearing. I mean,
is
know,
it? Yeah.
Don't always go right. Yeah, I mean, you know, a typical work day, I mean, we tend to do the same techniques over and over. And at some point, it's not the techniques that are exciting. You know, it really is the questions you're trying to answer. And if what you're doing is important and if it works, you know, it's just really exciting. You know, you don't mind so much doing the same things over and over. But, you know, there are people who spend their days, you know, talking to other people constantly. And you know, scientists, I mean, most of my time is spent actually, you know, on the computer, planning experiments, analyzing data. Then I'm at the bench and I'm doing the experiments. And most of that is
mm-hmm.
silent. And, you know, I talk to my
right.
colleagues, you know, bits and pieces. But you're just always thinking, you're always doing. And it's a different kind of work, I think, than a lot of people, you know, have in their jobs. And, you know, you have to have the right personality for it, definitely.
Yeah,
if you need a lot
like
of social interaction, I don't think you'd be
yeah.
very happy. Because we talk, but mostly it's business, you know, or we're really
but,
trying
yeah,
to understand
but mostly, yeah, it sounds like,
what's
yeah.
going on. Yeah.
Yeah, you're totally knee-deep in the research and, like you said, the data. But, I mean, obviously your brain's wired for it. You love the challenge, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I can also imagine you probably have a hard time turning your mind off thinking about it. You know, like just because you left the lab for the day, I can only imagine that your mind is still thinking about, you know, the next step or the next approach.
Well, that's
what
my
if
boss. He never stops thinking.
Yeah.
He never sleeps either.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I know it's true. You go home and you're always thinking, but you know, sometimes that's when you have your best ideas too, is, you know, just as you're about mm-hmm. to fall asleep or just when you wake up in the morning, when the mind's sort of in that fuzzy state. So,
yeah,
it's fun. It really is. And of all diseases, I think FSHD has to be one of the most challenging, if not the most challenging. It's just such a unique disease, you know, for all the things we talked about.
Do you think do you feel a sense of, you know, pressure to almost like a race against time, so to speak, of going after this cure or finding a treatment, you know, that can help so many people, not just those that have the disease, but those that are living
my
with
boss
it,
is
know,
yelling yes.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, we do, of course. You know, and we know a lot of patients, and when you know people personally, it's, you know, you have a vested stake in it. It's not just, mm-hmm. you know, helping faceless thousands of people. You know, you're really helping people that you know and you care about. Yeah, absolutely, we do.
But I can honestly imagine, though, that that's also extremely rewarding. Despite the fact that maybe you feel some days you're just spinning in that, you know, big, you know, mouse wheel, you know, lab joke for you, you know, that you're just, you know, it feels
yeah,
maybe some
laughing.
Days. Oh, yeah, the mice are laughing. No,
they're fine. They love
heck
it.
With the mice. Yeah, they love it. They can exercise. Come on.
Yeah.
But there has to be, I mean, to me, that is one of the biggest goals, I think, of most human beings is finding something that you have this goal or your lifelong, not necessarily achievement because you've met the goal, but it's the fight to reach the goal too. It's also part of
yeah,
the calling,
yeah.
if that
yeah.
makes sense. And I
yeah,
feel that
absolutely.
Your line of work, I mean, that's like right there. So in a way, I mean, for me at least, I kind of admire those people like yourself that are in that fight because it's really for a greater good. It's not just, I'm going to
yeah.
punch the clock. Not that that's
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, we're not just doing
you know?
This to, you know, to amuse ourselves. You
right.
know, right, exactly. You know, no, you always have, like you say, that sense of responsibility. Yeah, definitely. And one thing also about things like CRISPR that sometimes gets overlooked
mm-hmm. yeah.
is that it really is a bacterial system that was co-opted for use as a genome editing tool. You know, we really wouldn't have this promising tool if no one were studying bacteria. You know, and I think sometimes we get hyper-focused on trying to cure disease and we forget where the great discoveries that underlie these cures really come from. They come from these unexpected places and, you know, just trying to understand how life works at all levels. You know, and that's something funding agencies sometimes, you know, forget, and the government sometimes forgets. You know, but yeah, it's really, you know, fascination with science and just with basic mechanisms of biology, I think, you know, really does help do these impactful things. And the more we know about the world and how organisms work, I mean, it's only going to help us create more specific treatments. So yeah, that's my pitch for basic research.
yeah. And I guess then that's a nice segue there, because then I kind of ask, who are the forgotten, faceless, you know, people in this or companies in this that people don't realize are maybe at the foundation of it all? I mean,
yeah, I'd say all the people working on, you know, CRISPR and systems and bacteria, you know, prior to 2012, you know, this is a, mm-hmm. a big area of research, and they did all the you know, characterizing of this, you know, really mm-hmm. fascinating in its own right, immune system and bacteria, you know, and then they get overlooked and,
yeah.
You know, they don't win Nobel Prizes, but, you know, without them, we'd have nothing, you know, we really wouldn't
right.
have this at all. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, NIH doesn't get a whole lot of funding. And, you know, I understand that the focus now is translational. You know, you really have to prove that what you're doing is going to have an immediate impact, you know, somewhat direct impact for patients. But, you know, basic research is important, too. You know, side effects are largely caused because we don't understand the biology. You know, proteins mm-hmm. are great multitaskers. You know, you think about drugs, you know, targeting proteins and there's really hardly any proteins that do just one thing in the body, you know, and so you end mm-hmm. up with non-specific effects, and people have side effects, and sometimes, you know, billions of dollars get poured into drug development, and then, mm-hmm. you know, the drug gets pulled, and that's a huge waste of time and resources and effort, you know, but so the more we understand about biology, the better it is for everyone, and the less time and money get wasted in the long run. That's my feeling.
That's
anyway.
Your pitch.
Yeah.
Well, I think, and you know, that is spot on, because earlier how you mentioned that, you know, oh, we put all this money into research if it's trying to find a cure for cancer or this and that, and then you get, you know, conspiracy theorists that say, oh, there is no money in the cure. There's only money in treatment, or there's money in blah blah blah. You know, hospitals only make money when you're ill, so why would they want to give you a cure? And da 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 da. What do you say to those kind of conspiracy theorists that believe that there will be no
yeah,
cure
like this? That's extremely frustrating. I know there are people that think mm-hmm. this way, but you know, if SSHD were cured tomorrow, we would be thrilled. Mm-hmm. I mean, trust me, there would be something else to work on, and we would work on.
Right.
You know, yeah, we would. You know, if we can contribute even in a small way to an ultimate treatment, we would consider our lives well spent. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. There's I think more to be gained by that cure than I think people realize.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah,
and
not to
yeah.
mention funding, right? I mean, you know,
right.
I imagine the NIH budget for research would grow considerably if there were, you know, extremely if there were cures for major diseases.
Oh, absolutely.
And they came faster.
Absolutely.
You know, and yeah, and public sentiment would shift. You know, people wouldn't be as frustrated. So yeah, there's nothing but good to be gotten from treatments, and certainly no one is intentionally trying to slow anything down. Even though the system could work better.
Well, yeah, but that's almost any system, right? I mean, but it
yeah,
works better
yeah,
now than
yeah.
probably
composed
it did when
people.
It originally started. Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Humans just screwed all up.
Yeah, I know. We had robots doing this.
Now, when I have looked up the term CRISPR, okay, there's also been that rhetoric of, you know, creating a customized human, so to speak. You know, if parents want their kids to have blue eyes, they just, you know, switch
right.
the DNA around, or this and that. You know, it's screwing up God's plan or creation. Have you gotten any, you know, comments or feedback from people when, you know, you discuss what you do, and if they're on the outside, not really understanding it, but yet they know this part of it? You know, have you gotten that kind of feedback?
Yeah, you know, people, because everybody's heard of it, you know, it's really
sure.
on the public radar, and you know, it's widely hyped and widely publicized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the CRISPR system, as it's typically used, is a way of making permanent changes, you know, in the genome of a person or any other
right.
organism. And this is where the ethical concerns come into play. But, you know, it's really important to point out that we and other researchers are interested in this technique as a way of curing genetic diseases, not for changing hereditary traits. Mm-hmm. You know, and honestly, when it comes to complex traits, which is a lot of what people talk about, you know, engineering smarter, you know, better people, we don't even know or understand all the cellular pathways involved in producing a complex trait. So, you know, mm-hmm. really trying to engineer one in a human being at this point would not only be impossible, it would be disastrous.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, any technology, it's always, you know, technology, using it to help ease suffering in the world is a good thing, and I think we all reap the benefits of this every day. But we have to remember that no tool, you know, is intrinsically good or evil. Anything can be used well in the right hands or misused in the wrong hands. But it can be difficult to regulate the use of technology like CRISPR, especially in other countries.
Sure.
You know, so with a powerful tool like this, it's really important that we understand it as well as possible and really try to make it as safe as possible.
And,
but yeah,
and,
yeah, you know, these
yeah.
are concerns.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's no doubt. I mean, there's always a negative side, or like we even said, conspiracy theorists that seem to muck up the water. And I'm glad though that you came on to kind of give us a little bit of truth, actually a lot of truth, and explained it in a nice elementary school way for me. I appreciate that as well.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Because when I was looking into this and going, now wait, what do I have now? And what is this? What is this ducks thing? And does it have feathers?
Yeah,
you know,
it's complicated.
I didn't quite understand.
It's really
complicated. Yeah, I was like, holy man! Yeah, you couldn't give me something simple to try to decipher. But okay.
Okay.
So I'm glad you came on, and I'm really glad you spent the time with us today. And
oh,
obviously,
sure.
you said
oh, it's my pleasure.
Earlier, we can find more research or what's going on in your research by going to fshsociety.org. Is there any other sites or any place that they can, those that are inspired to maybe even donate towards your research that you want to plug before we bid you farewell?
Yeah, well, we have our lab webpage at the University of Nevada, Reno, Peter Takago Jones Lab. So, you know, anyone who's interested in finding out more about what we're doing or wants to help the lab, you know, is certainly welcome to contact us. But the FSH Society website is really a great resource for everything else, you know, including information about the disease. And CRISPR technology, you know, it's really complicated. I've simplified a lot, simplify it here.
Sure.
But we've also written kind of a primer explaining some of the nuances of our CRISPR work as it relates to FSHD, and that's also posted on the FSH Society website. So anyone who's interested can go and find that there.
Well, thanks again for joining us, and I'd love to have you on again in the future.
Oh, great. Well, thanks very much, Tim. I've really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. You have a great night. Thanks again.
All right, you too. Thank you. Bye.
So that was our fantastic Ms. Hamida, a PhD. If you look up her resume, it's very long. Research assistant professor at the Center of Molecular Medicine at the University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. That's more the short or long of it. Let's take a break here, and we come back. We'll have our next guest on. She's Katie Ruckert, who's going to talk a little bit about the walk and roll happening in Castle Rock. So let's take a break. You're listening to the FSH Society radio show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD, and share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Welcome back to the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for joining us. And we had a big segment about science and just what I thought was going to be complicated. It was honestly, you know, right in my wheelhouse of understanding, which I was very surprised because I'm not going to lie to you, folks. I flunked biology pretty badly. And I wish I had her as my teacher. That was a fantastic guest. Fantastic guest. And we have guest number two, looks like, dialing in right now. And let's bring her in now. This is Katie here to promote the walk and roll in Castle Rock. Hi, Katie. Welcome.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Anything we can do to promote the good works of the people out there helping out and, you know, helping the FSH Society, and we're happy to have you on. Tell us, actually, if you don't mind, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved?
Sure. So back in 2011, I was officially diagnosed with FSH muscular dystrophy, and it completely rocked my world. I was previously very active, a runner, lifting weights, whatnot, and so it took me by great surprise. And for the first few years, I just had a really hard time struggling with wrapping my head around that this is my new life and whatever that may hold for the future. Then eventually I finally found the courage to get involved with a support group, and I came across the FSH Society. And from there, we decided to start a fundraiser and start a fundraising committee. And then from there, our fundraiser just grew.
Mm-hmm. So how many years now then have you been doing this fundraiser?
This will be our second year, so Okay. It's still very in its infancy stages.
Sure. Oh, hardly. I mean, that's good. I mean, that's solid.
You're
bringing it back year after year. Tell us a little bit about it, because I love the walk and roll
sure.
You know, tagline you have titled to it. But tell us a little bit about specifically about the event.
Sure. So it's held here in Castle Rock, Colorado at the Philip S. Miller Park. It's a 350-acre park here that they built over the last few years. And so we host it there, and it consists of a 3-mile paved loop around the park. And so it's very accessible for anyone, which is great. And this year we're going to be having a silent auction involved, which we're really excited about. We've been working really hard and have some really exciting items. So that site just went live today. Beth Johnson has been working her little brains out on that site. So she's been great.
And what can people expect if they show up for the event there at the Castle Rock Park? Are they going to be able to walk that 3-mile loop or roll, as you termed it?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So registration is open now. You can register prior to the event or register on site starting at 9:00 on September 9th. And so from 9 to 10, we'll have registration and people looking at auction items. And we're going to have face painter, balloon artists, food trucks. The firefighters from Castle Rock will be there. We'll have bounce houses, all sorts of other vendors, from chiropractic to a local author by the name of Lisa Reneke, who will be selling her children's book as well. And 50% of proceeds will be going back to our event. And then around 10 o'clock, we'll get the event started. And so we're figuring it from like 10 to 11:30. It'll take about that amount of time for everyone to walk the 3 miles. And then after that, we'll come back and enjoy some music. We'll have a live band there playing from Chainsaw Rodeo. And what else? And then we'll announce our auction winners around 12:30. So it'll be a pretty fun morning. So if you're in the area, come out and join us. We would love to have you.
That sounds fantastic. I wish I lived near there, because I would be there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, it would be great. Yeah, just spread the word.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, that's why I was excited to have you on, because, you know, I know that there's a lot of good works happening, you know, through the FSH Society and other events such as yours that you know, want to help get the word out. So you know, anything I can do to help in that regard to have you on was, you know, my pleasure for sure.
Yeah.
You also talked about all these great people that are coming, the face painters, and then you said Chainsaw Rodeo is a band that's going to play as well. And it sounds like then
Correct.
It's a very, very, very family-friendly event then, right?
It's super family-friendly. Yeah, absolutely. So, and even if you don't want to partake in the 3-mile walk, you can hang out and mm-hmm. just hang out and come and join the ambiance and the atmosphere and get to know a little bit more about FSH or get to know some new people in the area. There's always the auction items that you can look at and bid on, and yeah, super family friendly. Especially with this disease affecting, especially with this disease affecting children, like it mm-hmm. was necessary to make it family friendly for sure. So my heart is, even
yeah.
though I live with this disease, my heart is about mm-hmm. the future generation.
Absolutely. I'm mm-hmm. definitely with you there. Cause you're right. I mean, when you mentioned about, you know, your story about being diagnosed, I mean, I was shaking my head. I know you couldn't see it, but in agreement about how that rocks your world. I mean, it wasn't even a year ago for me, even though I knew something was off for a very long time.
Right.
You know, and when you finally hear what that is and then you're not really sure, and then the bad words like no cure and life
right.
shortening, which I always find very interesting term. It's like,
yeah, like what does
oh.
that mean?
yeah. All right, like, okay, but it's not fatal, but it's life shortening. Tell me the difference.
Correct.
You know, so yeah, it's very,
yeah.
very interesting.
It's very
yeah.
overwhelming. Yeah, it's very overwhelming. And yeah, definitely, I always tell people, I just feel like I've lived two different lives. Like my
yeah.
first part of my life and now this part of my life, and I'm a completely different person from who I was before. So
yeah, it definitely kind of changes your perspective on a lot of things.
For sure.
Prioritizes things, I think, the right way for me, you know, as
yeah.
well as it sounds like for you. Not that my priorities are mixed up before, but it definitely
right.
you know, focus them in a little more clear for me, I guess, is probably the best way to say it. So
absolutely. I completely agree.
Last show, which was about, you know, 2 months ago, we had a month off, but we had this question that we posed on social media, and I'm the one that rattled the cages for everybody to get their brains firing up. So I'll ask you this question before we let you go. And the question was this,
okay.
is being a person with FSHD, what is harder for you, the physical side of it or the mental emotional side?
Well, definitely in the beginning, it was the mental emotional side. Cause I only had like a few things that were slightly off in the very beginning that obviously triggered something that was, you know, wrong.
Right.
But definitely for the first few years, it was mentally and emotionally, I was a wreck to say the least.
Right.
And now I definitely have gotten worse in the last 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still grateful for the things that I can do. And I just really try to focus on gratitude every single day for the things that I'm able to do and not focus so much on the things that I used to be able to do.
Right.
And just getting lost in the grief of it, of the losses. So it's a balancing thing. I'm not there every day.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm a lot better. I'm a lot better than where I used to be with this disease. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think about the future when, hopefully not, but if things get worse, hopefully there's going to be a cure, treatment. But then I'm like, I think about, wow, where am I going to be mentally and emotionally then? So, but right now I'm just trying to focus on today, not trying to think too much out to the future. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I hope that answered the question.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I know I put you on the spot with that. You know, you're like, I was
No. It's a great question. You know, it's a great question because I think about it all the time with myself. I'm like, gosh, like, what's harder, living with this disease or, you know, emotionally trying to wrap my head around it?
Yeah.
So, or, you know, physically living with this disease or whatnot. So, and it fluctuates different from day to day and whatever else is going on in my life, too. So.
Right, I totally agree. I mean, sometimes I'll be like, you know, doing the things I always have tried to do and still kind of try to push
sure.
myself through to do. And then I think to myself when the day is done, man, am I sore? Like, what did I do today? Oh, yeah,
right.
That's right. I have FSHD. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I almost block it out of my head until those moments.
Right. I know, because you get so used to living, like, with a certain, you know, whatever, limitation. And so I feel the same way. And then sometimes I feel so fatigued, and I'm like, oh, I overdid it today. And now I learned how to set back and say no, which was really hard for me because I was very type A before. But that's been a blessing in disguise as well when it comes to like perspective and whatnot, what you were talking about before. So,
well, thank you very much for coming on and promoting the Walk and Roll Castle Rock, Colorado event. And that happens, you said, on September 9th, 9 a.m. People can sign up either ahead of time or on site. So, we're excited for that event. And thank you very much for holding that event and coming on and talking about it today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Take care. Thank you.
You too. Thanks, Tim. Bye-bye.
So that's Katie promoting the Walk and Roll in Castle Rock, Colorado event. Take a look at that all at fshsociety.org. It's on that website as well. So we're up against the clock as we roll near the end of the show. And I guess I wanted to quickly, promote, of course, still, and say thank you to our guests that came on today for the show, talking about FSHD and the science behind it, and all the great things that I think that are in the works in those labs. People working very hard, very diligently, trying to help everyone find a cure. And I always say that, I've told a lot of people, about my disease. I've mentioned it and said something, but by no means am I more important than someone else that has either what I have or whatever their something is. And I've always said that my something is not special. It might be unique, to some people compared to others, but everybody has a something. If it's anxiety, if it's depression, if it's cancer, if it's this, if it's other forms of illness, we all have a something. And if we all band together and help each other out and deal with that something, I think the world's going to be a hell of a lot better place than where we left it. So I'm really happy to have, these great people on the show and talking about their stories and their battles and their something. So feel free, though, to take a look at all the events going on fshsociety.org, including the Saturday, September 9th event, the Walk and Roll to Cure FSHD 2017 at the Philip S. Miller Park at Castle Rock, Colorado. That begins at 9 a.m., so go ahead and look into that. Other events, Western Washington FSH community on Skype, they will be getting together September 23rd, October 5th. We drift into October. Oh, it sounds cold when you live up here in Wisconsin, but FSHC Connecticut Connections, First Church at Wethersfield, Connecticut, will be meeting. And October 21st, 2017, noon to 5, the FSHD Family Day Conference in Los Angeles, California. That's going to be a big event as well. So stay tuned for next month's episode as well, as we'll have some great guests on. George Pollack is going to come back and talk about his Race Across America ride. And we're also going to have Stephen Blyer on. He's a musician with FSHD and sharing his story. So we'll have double guests, so expect overtime next month. And I thank you for joining me. Follow us on Twitter at fshsociety.org. Contact us at the show here at fshsociety.org or myself at recroomshow@gmail.com. I'm Tim Hollenbeck. I've been your host for the FSH Society Radio. Thank you. Good night.